Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Hello and welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Fight fans, get ready, because coming up on today's show, I speak to the UFC Super Fight Champion. He's a UFC Hall of Famer, and he's also a former WWE superstar. Yes, Dan the Beast Severn is on this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. Dan definitely comes across as one of the most confident people I think I've ever spoken to, and certainly on the Best in the World with Richard Parr. And of course, we have a lot of confident people because these are Olympic champions, world record holders, world number ones. And yet Dan certainly comes across as confident and inspiring all at the same time. And we discuss a whole range of topics, including he gives us his interpretation of what his ring name, The Beast, actually means and means to him. He talks about the difference between cage fighting, which is what he started in, and mixed martial arts. He also discusses what is the difference between MMA and professional wrestling. We also talk about how he was able to learn the different disciplines of mixed martial arts, how he was given certain belts in judo and other sports such as jiu-jitsu and sambo. It's all in this fantastic chat with Dan the Beast Severn. And it's one of the longest conversations we've ever had on this show. You know, normally I ask for half an hour of these champions' time, and if I get more, then it's an absolute bonus. And Dan and I must speak for around about an hour. And even when we finish the conversation at the end of the chat, it's like, we could have gone for 2-3 hours. So if there is anything else you'd like to know from Dan, let me know. And we can always try and get him back on the show again in the future. And it really is a fantastic conversation. It's all coming up in just a moment with Dan the Beast Severn on episode 80 of The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Before we get to the conversation, I want to say about 99 Designs. Now, 99 Designs is a product that I personally use, and I used it to get a logo design for Sportacino, in fact. And what they do is when you give your request, they offer it to talented freelancers around the world, and they all give you their interpretation of the design. Then if you're not happy with any of these designs, you can get your money back. If you are happy, then you can pick a couple of designers and then work further with them. And then once you're really happy with one designer, you work with them a little bit more until you've got the perfect design. And this can be for a website, it can be for a logo, it can be for a business card, it can be for anything that you need designs. Go and check them out. Go and do it through sportacino.com/99designs. That's 9 and 9, the numbers, and designs. That's sportacino.com/99designs. Give it a try. Let me know what you think. It is a product that I personally use. All right, I did speak to Dan Severn a little bit earlier this year in the start of July, but we're now ready to share it with the world. Get ready. It is a UFC Super Fight Champion, a UFC Hall of Famer. He is the best in the world. It's Dan Severn.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Dan and the Beast Severin, welcome to the Best in the World with Richard Parr. Some amazing success in the UFC, a fantastic wrestling career. But let's first catch up with people who don't know what you're up to now, Dan. What's going on in your life at the moment?
Oh, holy moly there, Richard. I'll say, well, hello and thank you. But, do you have 5 or 10 hours here to talk about what all I have going on? I do not even say that jokingly whatsoever. I've got a lot of people that they wonder how come I look so young still for my age, and for the fact that I've gone through so many matches to fight that. I go, well, I said, I got too many projects going on. I have to live to be at least 125 to get the current to-do list done. And that's without adding anything between now and then. But give you some highlights. I bounce between two states, Michigan and Arizona. I'm born and raised in Michigan. And I went to Arizona State University. So for a solid decade, I lived out in Arizona between first 5 years student-athlete, second 5 years as the assistant wrestling coach before taking a job from Arizona State to Michigan State, again, in the sport of wrestling coaching. I was there for another 3 years. But just, you know, from there, you know, certain days that highlights of my career were in 1992 when a new rule change came down from the United States Olympic Committee that allowed athletes to be both amateur and professional simultaneously. That made a big impact upon my life because I had several small independent professionals and companies approach me through the 80s, but you know, at that time, had I turned pro, I would have been banned from amateur wrestling, and my amateur wrestling career meant too much to me. Mm. So I turned them down, but as of 92, boom, I've got a green light. So I first jumped into that, and then by 1994, this crazy cage fighting world opened on up, it was known as No Holds Barred, but it has now, all your listeners will know it as MMA or mixed martial arts. So, and I'll just say that I've always been busy. I tell people that I have lived out of a physical planner, and I've been living out of that since my junior year in high school, and it hasn't changed since then.
Oh, fantastic. So we're talking like a notebook, right?
Yeah, an actual physical one, because a lot of people say, well, why don't you use an electronic one? And because, you know, everyone... because they always hold up their cell phone. I go, well, and I'll hold up my cell phone and I'll hold up my actual physical planner, the little notebook, and I'll say, well, okay, watch. I'll drop the notebook. I go, it's good. Mm. If I drop my cell phone, I just lost a $700 to $1,000 phone.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to weather that same storm of falling just a few feet. And I go, I can actually leave this. It could fall in water, and I could shake it out off, and my planner will actually dry out. I've had this only happen to me twice in, 20 some odd years I've been operating out of a planner where actually I misplaced my planner.
Mm.
Once it's gone to a black hole space. Don't know that happened to me probably half a dozen years back, and another time. Relatively recently, as just a few months back, I had, and I know, and I keep thinking, it's not that it's lost, I misplaced it. I placed it someplace, and I just don't know where I set it down to, because I do so many things simultaneously that a lot of times I'll set something down nonchalantly, go on and do half a dozen other things, and then I'm like going, uh-oh, I got to start backtracking and try to find where I placed this. So my planner actually was outside at my Michigan residence, for over 2 weeks, and it probably stormed at least 4 or 5 times. And the thing, actually, it was luckily it stayed closed the entire time. Mm. It was saturated with water, nothing blurred or anything of this nature. But it took a couple of days of actually using like a blow dryer or stuff like this, and let it kind of lay out and have things lay in between pages. I mean, it looks like crap, but. I'm lost without it because I work on so many projects and what's coming up. And I even posted on my Facebook page that, sorry, folks, if you got me a book for something, You better get in contact with me because I don't have any clue as to what's coming up.
And when you obviously fill one of these planners up, have you kept all of the previous editions and everything like that?
Yes, I have. Actually, I have. I keep them, not all the daily detail type stuff. I typically will keep the month, each month for that year, because that's where, you know, a lot of people question how many matches I've had in MMA. For example, I'm just using this as just one example, and I don't really pay attention. I don't do a lot of searching on Facebook pages just to do random searches, and I'll simply say like something like, "Well, what does the internet say?" And they'll go to whatever Full Contact Fighter, Sheerdog, one of these watchdog websites, and they'll say, "Well, your record is this." I go, "Well," I said, "Well, they're close then."
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, "Well, what do you mean they're close?" I said, "Well, when did Sheerdog, Full Contact Fighter, all these other watchdog websites, when did they come about? You know, they didn't start right on up when No Holds Barred fighting was taking place. They didn't come into existence until maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 years after the fact, because everyone thought it was going to fizzle out, and they only really monitored one company, and that was the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Mm.
I said, when No Holds Barred broke, I used to have businessmen out here. I'm actually standing, I'm still inside the cage, and I've got businessmen coming up to me and handing me their business card and saying, "Contact me, contact me." And so I always tell people that you could probably easily add another 15 to 25 matches to my record conservatively.
Oh, wow. And when you would write down the, let's say you've got a match coming up on Sunday in yeah. your journal, in your book, would you then write any notes back in it afterwards of how well you did or anything to improve, or would it always be looking forward?
Not in the particular planner, because that I would be doing that independent paper.
Mm.
Just because the planner doesn't have enough room to write all my notes down. It's just good just to keep. I call it the monthly / daily planner. So I it does give me some space, but you know, just give you like. Let's see if I can actually give you an idea. Because today is July the 3rd, Monday, July 3rd. And basically, I have really only two functions taking place because of the holiday taking place tomorrow. As we were talking just a little bit off the interview earlier, I've been up since 5 a.m. this morning because I'm out here in Arizona, and it gets extremely hot, so I try to get out and get some things done. I've been swinging a pick and a shovel since 5 a.m. this morning, and I got my job done, and you know, all the garbage cans are out and stuff like this, so I feel good about where I'm at here right now. So now, as the heat is increasing, I'm going to be heading back indoors, and now I'm going to put my mind to work. I'm a big believer that you have to have body and mind in motion, and you better be exercising it in some type of fashion.
So, yeah, what do you mean by that? How are you going to put your mind to work now, Dan?
Well, again, I will go back into when the interview is done here, I actually will be heading back into the home there, and I will start to gauge my day of the number of different projects I'm working on. Even though like tomorrow's a holiday, even on holidays, even on Sunday mornings and Sundays, I'm not going to really call people on a Sunday, but usually on those kind of days, I will set off emails. I'll set off Facebook messages, things of that nature that I'd rather have it in somebody else, have it in their court, and I'm waiting on them than them waiting on me.
Mm. Proactive rather than reactive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's kind of like, it's the internet, it never sleeps. Mm-hmm. If we didn't think about it, it's sometimes it's hard to conduct interviews because you're in the, get correct me if I'm wrong, you're in the UK?
Yeah.
Okay, so while I'm in Arizona, you are 5 hours ahead of me right now. So you're looking at, it's 8:27, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. So it's about 3:30 your time, right?
Yeah, 4:30 actually, yeah.
Okay, just I was a little bit off of my math there, but again, I look at, well, I'm in Arizona, you're 5 hours ahead of me. When I'm back in Michigan, you're 8 hours ahead of me. So it's hard to make phone calls, but that's good. It's easy to set off Facebook messages and things of that nature. It gets harder yet when you start looking at even more greater time zone differences. I guess it's just really just my way of saying that. Yeah, getting back to what all am I up to? I'll say some of the primary things that I do is, like the number one thing is a lot of people bring me in for instructional type seminars. Anything that involves the grappling or wrestling skills in the United States, wrestling falls under the category of either folkstyle, freestyle, or Greco. We're the only country that does our version of folkstyle. That's what we do in our high schools, our junior highs, and at our colleges. And then, the rest of the world does either freestyle or Greco-Roman. So realistically, both athletes, their careers come to an end at the end of the high school career because not too many of them get an opportunity to go on to college and to participate in any kind of scholarship-type programs on a collegiate-type level. You know, I was very fortunate where in the sense that I went to college on a full athletic scholarship.
Mm.
You know, so that's what paid for my education, but it also opened up the world to me because I always tell people I've been to every country that has ever had a wrestling program and some that don't even exist anymore. So it's provided me with that avenue to travel and to meet people and to see things that otherwise I would have never seen in my life. But now it continues on because I still do a lot of instructional. Yeah, I refer to it as just conducting seminars. For some reason, in the martial arts world, they're caught up in the world seminars, whereas in the amateuristic world, they use the word clinics. Can we have you to do a folkstyle clinic? Can you specifically talk about turning and pinning combinations, or can you really work on escapes from the bottom position, or can you work on takedowns and things of that nature? So I can customize seminars now only because of what I've done from, say, 92 on. It kind of opened up a lot more of visibility when I started doing professional wrestling and my name started getting out there a little bit more and more. They're like Dan Severn, the professional wrestler. Well, they never knew who Dan Severn, the amateur wrestler, was.
Mm.
Or then by 1994, when I jumped into cage fighting world, and now there's Dan Severn, the cage fighter. I keep using that phrase, cage fighter, is because of, you know, to educate your listeners a little bit, they're only, I'd say 90%+ of your listeners or viewers of this article are going to only know the terms mixed martial arts or MMA. And the current product, mixed martial arts MMA, has either 47 or 49 rules to it. You know, you go against one opponent, you wear gloves, and there's all kinds of rules, regulations, there's sort of rounds, and the whole nine yards. We're back in the no holds barred or NHB period of time. There were only the two rules of do not bite your opponent, do not stick a finger in the eye socket, no eye gouging.
Mm.
End of the rules. And I always tell people, end of the rules, because people always say, well, you can't do this. You can't. I said, did you bite him, or did you stick his own eye socket? You're good to go.
Mm.
So there was only two rules that you had to conduct yourself by. There were no weight classes. There were no time periods. It was bare knuckles action. And the biggest thing is it used to be an 8-man bracket. In the same 2-hour pay-per-view that still plays to this day, you had to defeat 3 opponents, 3 men, because it was only men that was competing at this time. But that era is all gone now. I am the only Triple Crown champion from the UFC's no holds barred era, so it kind of puts me in a category all by myself. On top of the fact that in this cage fighting world, there's only 4 athletes in the world that have over 100 cage fights. I'm one of the 4. There's only 3 in the world that have over 100 victories. I'm one of the 3. Now, the ironic part is I have faced the other 3. I have defeated the other 3. And the closest one to my age is 15 years my junior. So once again, I put myself into a whole different classification because I'm lifetime chemical free. You find another athlete, especially at the heavyweight weight class, that can make all my claims. And here's the real two kickers, Richard. I have never been in a fight in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
And I've only done two training camps in a 20-year career, two. The rest of the time, I simply travel to, and half the time, I don't even know who I'm going up against until I'm in the cage, and I'm listening to the announcer, okay, so he's got a Muay Thai background, better watch out for kicks and elbows, and I'm putting my game plan together seconds before it's about to start.
So with that in mind, what were the advantages you had then over these people when you're not doing camps? You don't have research on your opponent. What is the edge that made you this amazing champion?
Well, I'll say two things. The biggest thing is I have a mental mindset that not equal to too many other people. That is the one thing I have really going for me. But then part of that mindset is I knew what skills were going to prevail for me. And I'm not going to climb into a cage, and I'm not going to fight your fight. I'm going to force you to fight mine. And mine's easier. It's an easier game plan because, you know, people always talk about the striking element is so important. And it is. But, you know, I was so old in my career. And again, you got to realize I did not even start a cage fighting career until just before turning 37 years of age.
Oh, wow.
You don't start a cage fighting career at that point in time. You retire and you flee from it. That's when I started, and I went 20 years beyond that. You'll never see it duplicated again, ever. I'll make wagers now for the future for any of your listeners that would like to go out and do that, especially when you take everything else into consideration of what I've done and the fact that I'm being lifetime chemical free and, you know, the fact that I said that I've never been in a fight before. I work with a lot of first responders. All the seminars that I do or instruction that I do, I work with law enforcement, corrections, air marshals, border patrol, military. And as far as I know, I'm still the only civilian ever to be brought on base to the world's largest private security company. And they've brought me back a couple times so far because they're amazed the way my mind thinks and what I can come up with. And I always tell all of these guys, I have never been any of the above, but I understand physical mechanics, and I always say that everyone has their gift, whether it be singing or dancing or mathematics or whatever else you have, right there, science. But my gift is physical mechanics. I work with I've had five children, so I've worked with my own children with them and their different athletics. So I had this one son that was a wrestler. I had another one that was in track and field, you know, daughter that was in volleyball. And so I actually would work on them with the, you know, even though I have a 10,000 square foot training facility in my backyard, you know, I would get out I purchased the basketball hoops. I would set up the orange cones so they could go back and forth and tell them they have to be ambidextrous. They have to be able to dribble a ball with their left hand equally as well as with their right hand. It just, to me, it's common sense, but common sense is not very common anymore.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a bit more about that and the mental side, and also, like you say, the physical attributes that you had, because, you know, with mixed martial arts, you've got to be an expert in, or many people are experts in different martial arts, and obviously you've got your wrestling backgrounds, you're an expert in judo, jiu-jitsu, sambo. When you would take on a new kind of martial art, were there any kind of routine and processes that you would help replicate from doing the last one, which would help?
Well, let me just correct you just a little bit on that.
Okay,
that,
sure.
A lot of those things that you mentioned, yes, I actually have a different degree levels or recognized certification type levels. I think I'm either, I don't know, first, second, or third degree black belt in judo and combat sambo and in jiu-jitsu. And I always point out, I go, folks, those are called honorary degrees.
Ah, okay.
My martial arts background is this. I took a judo class back in 1976. End of my martial arts background. Now, take that into consideration. I took a when I went to Arizona State, there's even more to the story. I have seven other brothers and sisters. I'm second on the totem pole. I would have never thought of asking my parents for money to go to college because they did not have it. And I would never have asked them to do that. I had a couple of my friends had older brothers. And I seen where they basically, upon high school graduation, they went into the military, gave up 4 years of their life, and then they come back, and then they went to college on what is known as the GI Bill. And I thought, okay, that's my route. I'll probably end up going because, you know, I'm taking care of things. But because scholarships started coming on my way, I took route number two, and I was going to college on a full athletic scholarship. And so, you know, I utilize my physical capabilities. Now, I'm trying to think, what was your original question before I went off on this little adjunct here? What was your original question?
It was effectively asking you how you would approach different disciplines of sports. And I think we can even branch that out into how you would approach different things in life, I guess.
Yeah, okay. That gets right back on scope. Well, my freshman year, I was a very successful high school wrestler, and I wanted to see how would I do at a Division I collegiate program. And so my first semester, you can actually see, my first semester, there, by all the classes I took, there wasn't going to be any degree anytime soon in my life because I took, to give you an idea, I took a nutrition class so that I knew that everything that I consumed was going to make me the ultimate wrestler. I took a weightlifting class that helped me to design weightlifting programs so I could make myself as strong as possible, you know, sports-specific. And then I took this judo class because judo teaches you a lot of good foot-sweepy-type techniques. And I had two instructors. I had an Asian instructor and I had an American instructor. The Asian instructor absolutely hated me because I did not conform to the Jadokian way. Mm. And then I explained it to both him and to the American instructor. The reason I took this class, now, test-wise, I aced all the tests. Skill-wise, I destroyed everybody in the class. I could have my way. I could probably have had my way with both of the instructors, you know, but out of respect, I would have never have challenged either one of them. But you know, I still got a poor grade because I did not do it the Jadokid way. I didn't do it the right judo. And then I told myself, I took this class to help me learn some good foot sweeping type techniques because the throws were not going to be good for amateur wrestling. And see, and now the American instructor started going and watching some of the home dual meets that were taking place, the college wrestling dual meets that were taking place. And he actually saw how I was doing exactly what I said. I'm foot sweeping I wrestled at both 190 pound weight class and heavyweight weight class. I bounced between the two. And he saw, well, I'm using these skill sets and stuff like this. And then at the end of my collegiate season, he says, hey, Dan, he says, how would you like to go and watch a judo tournament? I'd never seen one. And I go, sure. So I traveled down with, you know, he had a group of students. And he gets me at this location. He says, well, Dan, now that you're here, how would you like to compete? And I go, well, I don't have a gi or nothing like that. And it's like, ta-da, he had it all. It was a setup. And so he gives me this. I don't even know how to tie. Well, I should say I did have a judo gi for the class. I had to have one for that, but I did not bring it on that trip. But he actually even had to show me how to tie my belt correctly. That's how bad I knew I did. There's so much tradition that goes of bowing to the mat before you even walk onto it. You stand on a mark and you bow to your opponent, you bow to the referee, the side judges, all these traditions. And I look like some wild hillbilly out there because I'm not doing none of this because I don't know all of this. Mm. And, you know, And then you know, the referee's like, you know, he's saying hajime, which means the Japanese word for, you know, to commence the match is on, and I didn't know haji who, and then I'm thinking, okay, my opponent's coming toward me, I'm thinking, well, I guess game on. And I'm mauling these men. And I do this for probably half a dozen different tournaments. I'm wearing a white belt, and I'm mauling all colors, including brown and black belts. I'm mauling them, and then after doing this for about half a dozen tournaments, you know, the tournament officials, they literally, again, I don't know what the word is called, but there's a Japanese tradition where they basically promoted me just on sheer athletic ability. They brought me up, they took my white belt, they gave me a brown belt. After another half a dozen times I'm going to these tournaments, they took my brown belt, and they gave me a black belt. So yeah, I realize I'm out in Arizona. It's not like I'm jumping in a normal schedule. I just did it really for only about a couple years as it fit into my wrestling schedule, all the freestyle tournaments, the Greco tournaments, as it fit into everything else I was doing. Well, I'm out in Arizona for a decade. I come back to the state of Michigan. I see there's an all black belt tournament coming up. And I go, and I entered it. So as I'm filling out the paperwork, one of the people at the desk is like, well, what belt are you? And I says, well, black belt. And they're like, no, what belt are you? And I look again at him, I'm like puzzled with a puzzled look. I go, black belt. And they're like, no, are you a Nidan, a Shidan? You know, there's different levels of black belts. I don't know this. And they're like, well, they're asking, well, where did you get your belt? And I said, it was given to me. And now they're thinking that I'm some like lunatic, goofball. And the tournament director comes over, and he makes a mark on my belt sheet. He says, when your first belt comes up, he says, I'm going to be there to watch. He says, because I don't want to see you get hurt and stuff like this. I go, fair enough. And so my first match comes on up. It's all black belt tournament. I've got the returning champ. My first match out of the box. Typically, they always give the returning champ. They'll give him the easier route. Well, on his first match, I destroyed him in underneath a minute. and the you know, this tournament director was like just blown away. But again, am I doing it the judo way? No, I'm doing it Dan Severn way. I've bastardized my sport towards the combination of wrestling, judo, freestyle wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling, folk-style wrestling, all mixed into it. And he gives me a certificate. He says, here, he says, this will help you out for any future type of tournament. So, you know, that's what I say, that those are all honorary degrees. Like, for example, I'm a Sambo national champion on top of this. I have never taken a single Sambo class. I never even owned a Sambo jacket. I went to Sambo National Championships, registered, weighed in. I saw another guy close to my same size. I go, hey buddy, you care if I borrow your Sambo jacket for a couple matches? And I won the Sambo National title. But again, bastardizing my sports together. I keep saying bastardized because they're not all clean wrestling. Even jumping into the Ultimate Fighting Championships or my cage fight career, wrestlers do not stand upright like that, like they do in the fight world. It's a totally different. I mean, a Greco-Roman wrestler wrestles totally differently than what a freestyle wrestler does, and even differently than what someone will do in folk style. So literally, I understand all of these things. You know, so I'll say that my success is because I knew what my skill set was. It's not going to be. I'm not going to win contest because of my striking ability, but I better learn how to defend strikes, because in order for you to strike me, you must be within arm's distance. If you're going to kick me, you got to be within legs distance. And again, I understand the way you're training, because you're going to throw that fist out and then you're going to retract it. So I was always good about baiting, and so when they would throw, I would move a little bit out of range. And now you're going to recoil that fist back to you. And as you recoil it, that's when I would.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Move right on in. I'll clinch you, jam you up against the cage wall, or take you down, and I will simply look upon you and I go, welcome to my world. You will never see the light of day again, because in back of mind, if you do get away from me, you're going to reward me with punches and kicks, and I don't want to be punched and kicked.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
We'll have more from Dan in just a moment. Now, we've nearly been producing podcasts for 2 years on The Best in the World with Richard Parr, and we've done it all for free, and it takes a lot of work. It can be from the getting the guests through constant emails and phone calls and everything like that. It can be from doing the research for the interview. It can be conducting the interview. It can be editing the interview, uploading, doing all the promotion, doing all the social media. It's a pretty full-on job, and we've been doing it for you for free for nearly 2 years. And if you have appreciated what we've done and you would like to support what we're doing, you can do that using the crowdfunding site called Patreon. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/bestintheworld, and there you have the opportunity to donate to our program from as little as $1 a month. And, you know, on average, we're putting out at least 4 episodes a month. So that's 25 cents an episode. So you're listening to well over an hour's worth of knowledge from Dan the Beast Severin for 25 cents. If you can do that, if you can spare that, if you have a moment where you want to help support our show, I would really appreciate it if you could do it. All you got to do is go to patreon.com/bestintheworld. All right, let's return to the conversation with the UFC Hall of Famer, Dan the Beast Severin.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
So, can the Dan Severin methods, so to speak, be applied to other people if they've got a good background, maybe in amateur wrestling or maybe in something else, and then just enter tournaments and kind of learn that way? Or is this really unique to you?
I would say they're not going to be able to do their sport clean the same way that I always tell people. I did not do my sport clean. I bastardized it. And that's the same way that they're going to have to be able to do it. You can't, you still need, you know, the matches all start on their feet. So the very first thing you need to do, you have to have at least some type of striking defense mechanisms in place, whether it's to prevent to be kicked, punched, but then now gets into closer range, kneed, elbowed. And then after that, now you're getting into actual clinching and takedowns and close quarter combatives, and that's where, you know, the stuff that I do at close quarter combatives, most do not ever see. My style was not exactly a fan favorite, because most people did not see what I was doing. But if you were to ever talk to my opponents afterwards, they would be like, "Oh, dude, he, every time he touched me, he put me in pain," and I did. Mm. My workout partners would tell you the exact same thing, that I have the gift of pain.
And that's the gift of giving it, though. But what about taking it? What was your threshold, and how would you mentally get through some situations where you'd be in a lot of pain?
Well, again, I'd say it's that mindset, but at the same token, you know, I've been torqued on so for so many years through amateur wrestling. My amateur wrestling career really prepared me well. Not my domestic side amateur wrestling career, because that's civilized, that's nice. But my international freestyle and Greco-Roman career is the aspect to know that, you know, let's face it, America is hated by a lot of other countries for what it represents. But again, that's where I'll say that. I always tell people that I made my first international trip in 1976. And in that first trip, I learned, my eyes were opened up a great deal. I learned the word propaganda oh so well. How other countries uses it against us, but then how our own country uses it against the sheeple as well.
I was just going to ask, was there a favorite country you did like going to, and where also was the most hostile?
Well, I'd say the most hostile was, you got to realize, you know, I was still wrestling during the Cold War era. So any of the communist bloc countries were against the United States. You know, to be in Russia, which was then known as the USSR, you know, the Soviet Union. You know, to be in East Germany when there was an East Germany, to see it pass through the Iron Curtain, to see the Berlin Wall while it was still intact, while it was caging people in, and to talk to these people and to see the mentality. And it was almost like watching, well, being in East Germany, it was like a black and white film, and then to look beyond it and to see all the brightness and colors in other areas, it was just, you know, the difference of night and day, just the attitude of people and things of that nature. So I'll say that I chalk up that my international competition experiences has been one of the greatest educational aspects of my career. Literally, when it comes to people are almost all the same. They just want the best for their families. They want to be left alone. Unanimously, worldwide, most people wish if they could do away with their governments. It's their governments that muddle the situation, and the propaganda that they spill to stir up the pot, to make people either dislike each other, things of that nature. That's why I very rarely even watch the news anymore, because it's all BS.
Mm. Did I read that you don't even have a TV?
No. You probably read the article that when I did do my two training camps, I did have a TV. It was a black and white TV with an old VCR set up just so I could watch some of the matches.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, when I actually did know of an opponent, but you know, that was only for like UFC number four. Did I even have a chance to even look at anything? Yeah, you know, because it's not things were not readily available like they are today. Because like today, I could simply say, okay, who's my opponent, Richard Barr? Okay, I can Google your name. I can see what your fight career is. I can get on YouTube. I can see some of your matches, and I can critique your fight style. And to see what do I feel is are your weaknesses. I mean, there's so much more at your fingertips here right now. I was, you know, for example, I think 12 or 18 hours into my master's degree at Arizona State, but I was also a couple years ahead of the internet era. So when I left Arizona State to go to take the new job position at Michigan State, that's where my master's died on the vine, because I had to stay there in order to finish up my degree. Whereas just a few years later, you know, you've got the internet era to where now you can simply just go online and get a master's degree. I was always actually, I was thinking about, you know, my older brother basically ended up getting himself a PhD. I think I'll do that too.
Yeah. I want to talk about how you were able to, you know, like you said with the early days of the UFC, how there was only two rules and everything like that. And then you also were a professional wrestler, and obviously in professional wrestling, it's not so much about almost trying to make the person submit and trying to actually beat them like real physically to a pulp. How were you able to adapt between the two?
Well, the first profession, you know, as I said earlier, as of the 92 Olympics, my first profession was professional wrestling. Mm. So I first started doing that, and, you know, just like what you said right there, they're as different as night and day. One is a true athletic competition, where the other one is an athletic performance. But I always tell people, because I, you know, I travel a lot and for appearances and seminars, and I always bring four belts that travel with me, four most recognizable belts in the world, three from the Ultimate Fighting Championship and one from the world of professional wrestling, the National Wrestling Alliance belt. And people will see them on display, and they're like, oh, and they're on, and they're like, oh, these are original belts, stuff like that. And I go, yep, they are. And then they'll say, NWA, what does that stand for? And I said, it stands for National Wrestling Alliance. It was a world-dominant organization, you know, dating back to late 1800s until probably right around, let's say 50s, 60s, probably even into the early 70s. Very prestigious if you were. It used to be hold the NWA title belt. A lot of people would say, well, what kind of wrestling is that? I said, well, if you watch like the WWE or TNA, those are the two television type of products. And then they say, oh, you mean, they say the fake stuff? I go, don't say the word fake. I said, because these athletes are taking physical trauma to their body to be picked up and to be body slammed, to be hit with clotheslines, the whole nine yards. You know, even the professional wrestlers don't realize that they're learning the most basic fundamentals of martial arts breakfall and how to land with as much body mass as possible so that you can dissipate, you know, the impact. And, I said, obviously you recognize these three belts back there. And I go, oh, yeah, I love the no holds barred, or I love the mixed martial arts aspect of it. I go, then why is it? I go, you recognize these three belts back here. I said, why is it, as I'm pointing towards the NWA belt, why have I been hurt far worse in my professional wrestling career than I have been in all of my cage fights combined?
Mm. And why was that, Dan?
Well, again, they're puzzled. And again, the reason is this, and it's very simple. It's a very simple explanation. I always tell people, in a true athletic competition, all you got to do is walk out there and get results. You're not trying to fill a book of time, because in professional wrestling, you're filling a window of time. The promoter might say, you know, Richard, you and Dan, you've got to go out there. You've got to give me a 15-minute match. Richard, you get to win, but you got to win in a cheating fashion so Dan can still look good as a strong baby face, and there's a chance now of rebooking a rematch. And from there, you guys go figure out how you want to put your match together. But in a 15-minute match, there's got to be give and take. I can't go out there and just kill you off in the first 30 seconds, because we have to fill a 15-minute window of time. So in this 15 minutes of time, there's going to be you're going to pick me up, you're going to body slam me, you're going to choke me on ropes, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You're going to go up to the top ropes, you're going to do like a moonsault type thing, that's a killer type move. I roll all the way, boom, you hit, yeah, all the way. I fire on up, I pick up, and I start doing European uppercuts. I pick on up, I body slam you, this and that. I mean, so there's physical trauma taking place throughout this entertainment sport. One of the sheer facts that I think professional wrestling has some of the highest death rates of any profession, period. Now, not inside the ring. Most of these athletes, they start, it's due to what's called chemical cocktails. I use the best known company, WWE. Last I knew, the average contract for WWE athlete was 187 dates a year. That doesn't mean travel to or travel back from. So 187 dates a year that you are going to be climbing into a ring and doing a performance. So if you get tweaked up, a lot of these guys, they start getting on painkillers. Then comes at the muscle relaxers. it's a crazy schedule, so they need something to get them up and get them going in the morning, some type of amphetamine. They need something to put them to sleep at night, so they get some kind of sleep. And then no one wants to see pasty, white, weakling type of guys, so now they get on steroids. They get on growth hormones. And now you mix any of that with party favors, alcohol, or getting into any other drugs of your choice, and they wonder why your heart gives out. And it's one of the, well, not one of them. I think it is the highest death rate of any professional, of any profession on an annual basis.
And how difficult was it being in those surroundings with all of that going on, and how, you know, how often were you being offered with potentially other drugs which could help you and get through any injuries?
Honestly, Richard, I've been around that stuff all my life. Like, I realized, okay, I graduated out of high school in 76. While being in high school, cigarettes, alcohol, marijuana, LSD was always around. Now, thankfully, I just don't like the taste of beer whatsoever. Just had never have. I mean, I've been to Germany half a dozen different times. I've been on different tours of breweries, tasted the lights, the darks, the whole nine yards. I just don't like the taste of beer, period. So I don't do stuff. I'm not going to drink it if I don't like it. So I'll say that's probably been a good thing. But I've been around all this stuff. I just don't partake into it. You know, I was an athlete my entire high school career. Yeah, you know, I've been an athlete my entire life. It's always been around, but I've used different ways of diffusing it. You know, they're just even to the point. I've actually, during my MMA career, I had two different companies approach me. So like, Dan, we'll take care of all of your financial expenditures, take care of all your bills. We just want a percentage of your winnings. But part of the deal is we want you to get with our doctors. Because of your age, because of your size, we think that we can get you up to probably 325 pounds, ripped at about 6% body fat. You'll have probably 35 to 40% more power, and I already have a gift of power. Mm. And, you know, but I had that the thing is, I had to get on their program. And I just, I do too many things. I turn them down. Mm. I do a lot of speaking engagements with whether it be high school, junior highs, and even on the collegiate level. I do a lot of motivational type speaking, and I'll say that. And I talk about, you know, one of the aspects. I talk about the importance of education. I talk about the importance of talk about peer pressure. You know, everything from bullying, and now there's cyberbullying that's really into it, but I'm not exactly a very politically correct type of individual of what I, when I talk about it, but I always had a way of simply saying no, turning it down.
Would you say that the problem with the drugs that you mentioned in the world of professional wrestling, in comparison to, say, mixed martial arts, where there have been reported cases of performance enhancing drugs, would you say that either one of them, mixed martial arts or professional wrestling, has got a worse problem?
Well, I would say that professional wrestling by far is a much worse category, just in the terms of when you look at how many people die on an annual basis in professional wrestling. You know, here's something. Let me throw a question back at you, there, Richard. Do you know of any other company in the world that, okay, let's say you own this company and you have one of your employees, you realize he's got an alcohol problem or he's got a drug dependency type problem in some type of area, and you, the owner of the company, will allow at your cost, you're going to put that employee into a rehab program. And after they've gone to this rehab program, they come back up, and you're going to then rehire them. Do you know of any company in the world that does this?
Offhand, I don't think I can. I don't think I can.
And anyone I've ever posed this question, it's the exact same answer. None. There's none. But the WWE has this drug rehabilitation type program in place. And they don't do it just once, twice, three, four, or more times that people have fallen off the wagon. And that they'll pick up the bill each time. I commend Vince McMahon for being that generous, but at the same token, you know, that individual is an idiot at that point in time. They're kind of a lost cause. If I don't know if they're starving for the attention, if they need a vacation, I don't know. I don't get it.
But there aren't vacations, though, are there? It's like it's a year-long season. So is that as much of the problem with, you know, the wellness policy? From what I've read about it before, I believe that they have kind of three strikes and you're out, although there's always rumours and allegations that certain strikes of certain people don't get reported. But
exactly. And that's exactly fair. You should be able to put in a program knowing that. I mean, there's always going to be exceptions to all rules. But it's got to be a very rare instance that something like that happens. So it just boggles my mind that that industry that is allowed time and time again.
But does the problem always go back to not necessarily the wellness policy, but is it actually the fact that they are working those 187 days, that in fact they should be given, like any normal employee would get, of a 25, 30-day annual leave, of working less dates, less time, and almost like kind of emergency of, all right, as soon as you've mentioned one type of niggling injury or something like that, that you're off for 10 days or something like that. Are these the things they need to be thinking about more then?
Well, I mean, there are things that are in place there for them. I mean, again, Richard, let me go back to, see, I can't really say, really speak on behalf of most of these professionals, because I'll say that I'm involved in that industry, and I've learned certain aspects about that industry, and there's certain things that actually have helped me in my career in general. But I don't. I was like the anomaly in that industry. I've had, even still to this day, I walk into to wherever that show is at, because I still do professional matches, and I have. There's still not a single occasion that doesn't pass me by that where someone will kind of pull me off the side and they'll be talking to me a little bit, and then out of this conversation they'll say, "Why do you continue to do this?" I say, well, I enjoy it, first off, and I, you know, because we, you know, the reality is, none of us are going to get out of the game of life alive. How long were you in the game, and how much fun did you have along the way? Now, as a broad, again, I make broad statements, and I always say there are exceptions to all rules. As a broad statement, professional wrestling is one of the worst industries I've ever been involved with. Now, there are shining points in that where there's been some exceptional people I've met along the way, and some very unique experiences that I owe it to that world. But my whole point was, at no time in my life was I doing just one thing at one time. You know, giving you like some timetables and what I'm doing, you know, I'll tell people that, you know, I graduated out of high school in 1976. I'm the number one recruited athlete at my weight class in the United States. And I've got the education, what's known as GPA, your grade point average, to go along there with it. And I even had a congressional nomination, which means now I can go to the Air Force Academy and a few other really privileged type of schools. So I tell people, it's 1976, I'm there. by 19, let's just jump ahead two decades. By 1996, I'm the number one cage fighter in the world. That's two decades later. What's the guy been doing in the last two decades? A ton. And then, you know, and then that's 1996. And then you look at 2016, I was supposed to be doing yet another cage fight. You know, I started a cage fighting career when all others would have retired. And then to go for two decades after that, you know, I mean, Richard, I'm a 59-year-old man. I don't look like a 59-year-old man. I don't act like a 59-year-old man, and I'm physically sound, and I'm mentally sound. At least I hope so.
Well, you sound pretty mentally sound to me, Dan.
But you can hold an intelligent conversation because I'm not worn, torn through all those competitions. I'm not punch drunk. And there's a lot of athletes that are way younger than me that you would be very tough to have a conversation with because they've been hit one too many times. The wiring is no longer connected. That's one of the other, in the very beginning, what has Dan Severn been up to? A couple of the other areas I'm working on is because of some of the brain damage that has been taking place in the pugilistic arts, because it's not just for mixed martial arts. It's not just the boxing or kickboxing, Muay Thai, karate, kung fu. I mean, they all, you know, even football. You've got this helmet, American football, I should say. But then also how it pertains to military applications. When you have all these soldiers that are returning with PTSD. As I said before, I work with a lot of first responders, so my heart first goes out to, you know, the military and stuff like this, because they're out there, they're doing their job, you know, without questions being asked. So I like the fact that I continue to help people. When I took up teaching the sport of wrestling, my wrestling career, been doing it since 69. Started to teach it by 71, and by 1972, I won my first national title. How old are you, Richard, if you don't mind me asking? I should say, when were you born?
1982.
So again, you and I, we never met. But my whole aspect is, of bringing that up, is I always tell people, I've been competing longer than what most people have been alive, and I'm not done yet. That's just it. I'm not like sitting here in the rocking chair talking to you. Going way back when. No, I'm not. We're not. I'm still a competitor. Life is competition. Again, that's my mental mindset.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, because I think this is a good way to kind of like wrap up the interview, because you've kind of gone back to the original question and talking about those different decades and answering why someone asked you why you're still doing professional wrestling because you want to. If I was to do an interview with you, Dan, in 20 years, in 20, let's say 2037 or something, what would you have liked to have achieved in those next 20 years?
Well, it's the same thing that I'm achieving now. I'm making a difference. I'm making an impact. I did that early on when I just started doing my amateur wrestling instruction. I made you a better athlete. But not just an athlete. I'm also going to make you a better person. Yeah, I have a 10,000 square foot training facility. I'm a probably back in Coeur, Michigan. I have ongoing classes there, even in my absence. But when I'm there, you know, a lot more people, I take over the class. I take the lead of the classes because I like teaching. And it's even though I'm teaching the exact same thing, I just have a little bit different way of approaching it, a different little way. And the fact is, I got all these young bucks that they're just trying to keep up with the old guy, me. and they're hard pressed, you know. The thing is, it'll be on my tombstone, the fact that Dan Severn made a difference. Whether it was in wrestling, whether it was in mixed martial arts, whether it was in first responders and how they train and how they perceive things, because I'm making changes there on both sides, legislatively and other stuff. But then, you know, the thing, all the impacts of what I'm doing here for first responders, the brain damage that has taken place, and there's even a few other projects that I'm not at liberty to talk about right now, but somewhere in the next, say, 60 to 90 days, there'll be reasons for why people should be talking to Dan Severn again.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great place to stop, Dan. And one of the last things I normally ask my guests to do is to tell us where we can continue to follow what you're up to, and also where people can continue to get in touch with you if they want to improve their lives and learn from you.
Yep. The best way, and I'll just give up my website, is www.dansevran.com. www.dansevran, Severn is spelled SEVERN.com. There is listed all my social media aspects. So I do Facebooks, and I do answer questions. I'm a little behind. When I say a little behind, oh, I probably be 200-300 messages behind their loans, just like that. They will eventually get a response from me on my emails and that. So I do respond to all my stuff. They are all my answers. It may not always be me behind the keyboard, because I might have someone there, like one of my sons or daughters that might be typing out an answer for me, like, "Dad, how do you feel about this?" And I'll go blah blah blah, and those will banging out the keyboard, because they're way better than what I am on all this social media stuff.
Fantastic. Well, Dan, it's been so good to talk to you. It's been really insightful, and I've definitely learned a lot. Dan, the B7, thank you for being the best in the world.
Well, that's it. Okay. The best note on that, the beast. The beast has a lot of negative connotations. I did not make up my ring name. It was given to me by the legendary American football player by the name of Jim Brown, NFL Hall of Fame. When I first showed up, I wore glasses, I wore a sports jacket and a tie, and he never saw the transition. Again, I don't even want to get into the story of the whole aspect, but he gave me the ring name of the Beast. Now, the Beast has a lot of negative connotations. Anyone that knows me knows I'm not a negative person. I'm a very positive person. So I'm like, what can I make this ring name, this cage name, the Beast, stand for something I can live with? And so I came up. The word the, T-H-E, stands for Dan Severn. I'm a teacher, humanitarian, and I'm an educator. My message to young people is beast, to believe in yourself, to educate yourself, to adjust your everyday attitude, to study hard, and then to teach others, because you can't take it with you. So share in the wealth and make other people better people. That is what the beast stands for. And now I think we can sign off.
Dan, thank you so much. It's been really good to learn from you on the Best in the World podcast. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Richard.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
One of Dan's fiercest rivals has already appeared on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Yes, Ken Shamrock has already been on the podcast. Go back and listen to that at sportacino.com or at acast.com/best or on iTunes. And you can listen to lots of other interviews on the program from pretty much any different sport that you can think of, from snooker to darts to cricket to rugby to athletics to speed skating to curling. It's all been on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. Go and check all of those episodes out, and if you do get a moment to subscribe to us on iTunes, that would be greatly appreciated. Plus, if you get a moment to give us a rating and review, I would really appreciate that as well. All right, that's it for this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. I'll be back with you next week. Until then, have a wonderful week. Goodbye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.